to the Decision Wise Leadership Intelligence podcast. The title of today's session is Recognizing Leadership Derailers. My name is Matt Ride, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Decision Wise, an organizational development consulting firm headquartered in Utah. I'll be moderating our podcast today. My guest is Charles Rogel. Charles is the Vice President of Marketing and Products here at Decision Wise. Charles has his MBA, and he's been with the company now for more than 13 years. He's employee number two, and is also a minority partner with the firm. He leads all of our product and marketing efforts and does leadership coaching and 360 debriefs. Charles, did I miss anything?
You know, and I'm feeling very uncomfortable in this role reversal because normally I'm the moderator interviewing the various employees here and developing content and whatnot. So this is kind of fun. So I remember, you know, as I joined the company 13 years ago, I came on as the first sales rep, first official salesperson for DecisionWise. Before it was just a couple consultants and some project managers that ran surveys. And so the task was really to drum up business. And I remember one of the first clients that I had was Stryker Corporation out of Kalamazoo, Michigan. They make medical devices. They have about, at the time, I think 15,000 employees around the world. And we're working with a client who became a dear friend of ours named Mike Rood, and he approached us about conducting 360-degree feedback surveys. And he wanted to do them with all the leaders in his organization, but he wanted to do something different and include a section of derailers on the survey. And we'd been doing 360 surveys for years and years before that, but we'd never had derailers. We just measured regular leadership competencies like everybody else. And so this is kind of a new request. We were familiar with the concept because we had done, you know, we understood what leadership derailers were and seen a lot of the research that had been done by companies like Hogan or Lominger. And so we said, okay, we'll try it out. We'll give this a try and come up with some derailers. And so we worked with him to define what derailers were important for this particular organization and what the leaders kind of struggled with. And we came up with a set of 10 or 12 derailers, I think, to put on their 360 survey. And since that time, we've always included, we created our standard surveys to include a derailer section, which is somewhat unique in the marketplace, to measure these areas or these behaviors that kind of get in the way of leadership success. So hence the topic for today. It was kind of a fun ride that we had years ago as we went through developing that and measuring it. We weren't sure what we were going to get the first time. There's some anxiety about, okay, are people going to be really upset to get negative feedback? You know, they're scared to kind of measure these things. But it's all worked out great. It's been a great tool, and we have some good research to share on the presentation today.
Who is this today's topic targeted towards? Who do you think is going to benefit most from talking about these derailers?
It's really a good topic for all leaders, but more specifically new leaders in the organization. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one is when people are promoted to a position of leadership, many times these leadership derailers don't appear because they're kind of masked. So working on your own, you know, being an individual contributor and producing, many times these behavior issues or problems you might have don't come up, or at least they're masked because you're doing a great job. And so they only start appearing when you start interacting with others. So instead of trying to get work done on your own, you're trying to get work done through other people. And by managing people, these personality quirks of yours might start appearing more and erupt more as a derailer in your leadership behaviors.
Yeah, that's interesting. You just don't have reason to see them until you have to start managing people as opposed to just managing your own work that you have to do day to day. It was interesting when you talk about the derailers. One of the things that our clients have liked about them is they're a bit of a gauge on emotional intelligence.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? And I was curious, when Stryker came to you, why did they feel it was important to kind of talk about these derailers? What were they seeing as a need there?
Well, the big need was, there was something missing on their 360. They were measuring competencies, leadership competencies that were important for their success. But some leaders weren't quite getting the message. Some leaders had problems where they might score really well on results orientation, planning an organization, but yet this person was a micromanager or ended up being volatile sometimes. And so things that really tarnish their ability to get things done or succeed weren't appearing on a normal 360.
So over the years, through a lot of it being your research and then Tracy's research, mm-hmm. you've come up with how many of common derailers?
So the set of derailers that we use now are 13 common derailers that we use on our 360 surveys. And we've kind of tweaked it over the years, but these are the ones that have kind of settled out as the most common ones and the most critical ones to success.
Okay. Is a derailer the same thing as a weakness, or is there a difference there?
No, so let's talk about the definition a little bit. There's a slight differentiation between the two. So when we talk about a derailer, we label it as a behavior that challenges or undermines your results. It's a behavior that gets in the way of your optimal results. And it's not just a weakness, because we all have weaknesses that we may not need to develop to succeed. So a derailer is really a weakness that requires improvement if we're going to be a good leader. So for example, I might not be detail oriented, but I might not need to be detail oriented in my role as a leader. And so I can manage that deficiency by either maybe having a good assistant who's on top of things, or using technology to track things to be more detail oriented. So that could be one of my weaknesses, but not necessarily a derailer.
And so that's the power of a 360 with the derailer is you need to uncover it. And once you've uncovered it, you can take steps to manage it. Sometimes you don't have to even do anything other than be aware of it, and you don't have to necessarily spend a lot of time. You can work more effectively with your assistant, as in the example you just gave us.
That's right. So managing it might be being aware of it and maybe avoiding it, or putting yourself in situations where it doesn't come up. But a derailer really does require some behavior change. And a lot of times we might not be able to fully overcome it, but if we recognize it and can kind of contain it, then we'll do a better job.
Tell us then, now that they were added as part of we've had them for a while in our 360 degree feedback tool. We've now developed a fairly robust database that's associated with these. What are some of the things that we've been able to glean out of that database?
Yeah, so there's two specific things I want to talk about. And we'll go through all 13 of the derailers and describe them and what they are and how they kind of appear. But the two cool things that we can talk about are kind of our benchmark comparison, or the number of people, or how prevalent these derailers are. So we know in general which ones appear most on 360s. We also know that there's certain combinations of derailers that are more toxic than your regular derailer. So if you put two of them together, if you have these two kind of bad behaviors going on for yourself, that's even worse than just having the one. And it leads to some other issues, and we'll kind of talk about those.
So they build on each other, multiply, or kind of cause an exponential effect.
And we do see some pairing going on. We do see some leadership competencies that are overused and turn into derailers too. So there's some of that happens. If you're really good at planning an organization, again, that micromanagement thing might creep into your leadership style.
Okay. Well, let's get to it. Let's go through these 13 leadership derailers. And this, again, is for the benefit that someone who's new can really start to examine whether these are in their current leadership style, and maybe we can talk about things they can do to kind of minimize their effects. So let's get started with the first one.
So the first one is lacks focus. And the way we describe this is that you're easily distracted. You shift from task to task without getting the most critical things done. Now, all of us, I think, can kind of claim to be lacking in focus at some point or another. You know, we pride ourselves on being multitaskers, and we think that the more we get done, the better or more effective we are. But this derailer appears a lot of times when people notice it, because you're the person that is always kind of starting projects and not finishing them. Maybe you're the idea guy, you know, you're the creative type. But you jump from one great idea to the next without really focusing and getting things done. And that's really valued as a leader, because people look to you for direction. They look to you for prioritization. And if you keep jumping around, people get frustrated. They feel like they're getting overworked. They're just too distracted. They can't really get behind a good idea.
What are some ways do you think that a new leader then can make sure that they're sort of, is it just as simple as tracking what they start so that they can see it through to the end? Or thoughts there?
So a lot of it is becoming aware if you're doing this or not. So again, through a 360, you'll be able to tell, but you can also talk to your boss and direct reports and people you work with. But it's really understanding that, okay, do I have some big priorities? Where we are, where we at in accomplishing those? How goal-oriented am I? Or do I find that my to-do list just kind of gets bigger and bigger and I lose my to-do list from the previous day and don't even remember what I was supposed to do?
Okay. All right, let's move to the second one.
Yes, the next one is not a team player. Selfish, places personal agenda before the good of the team. And I want to modify this in a little bit in that it depends on what team you're playing on, right? So as a new leader, you tend to be pretty protective and take a lot of ownership for your own team, the people that you're working with. You want to see them succeed. You're trying to protect them, make sure that you're getting your job done in your sphere of influence. But as a leader now, you're probably a member of another team, a more senior leadership team or a group of team leaders, which are trying to accomplish the organization goals. And so many times you might be fighting to protect your own turf at the expense of organization results. And so in that case, you want to make sure that you're not just one-dimensional in your leadership, that you're not just looking out for only your team members, but that you have the organization's focus in mind, and you're actually sharing that and bringing your team members along.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up. I see that as well in those that we coach and in those that we help. Is there's a shift once you become part of management, you sort of have to sort of stop kind of huddling with and sort of taking this us against them approach.
Yeah.
And you have to become loyal to the company, and you have to represent the organization as best you can. And this can really emerge as a derailer at that point, is if you're constantly fighting your team's battles, you're not going to be effective, as you said, with that peer network as well as that senior team that you might be a part of.
And as we talk about those first two, looking at our benchmark data, lax focus is one of those, is one of the three or four highest derailers. In other words, they appear the most on people's 360 reports. Not a team player is one of those medium ones. It kind of appears every so often, but is not as as high as those other, the top four, I should say. So the third one is being disengaged, and we define this as appears bored or dissatisfied with work, doesn't just enough to get by. This one is one of the lowest scoring ones, and we've kind of debated about whether we should kind of keep this on here and keep measuring it, because it there's not very many instances where an individual gets this one. But this occurs when a manager is maybe feeling overmanaged by their own boss. They feel like they have little impact. They're just doing or following orders, and they're not really stepping up and taking as much ownership as they need to for their team. And so that's when you become disengaged. You just kind of go through the motions, and you're just kind of calling it in as opposed to really showing some leadership.
You know, I think the area where we do see it, Charles, is sometimes in industries or in organizations where there's no room for advancement. They sense that they're stuck. And as you said, they sort of mail it in. And so that's something that leaders have to think about when they're designing their organizations, is that you can create this derailer if you don't give people a place to grow.
And it really comes in where you need to lead as opposed to manage. Management can be kind of boring, you know, scheduling employees, you know, filling out reports. But if you're leading with vision, then you're much more engaged in the work that you're doing.
All right. You shared with me that the fourth derailer is not trusted. What does that mean?
So we define that as violates or compromises the trust of others, has difficulty gaining the trust of others. So this doesn't necessarily mean you're a liar. It means more that maybe you don't have the back of other people when there's a situation that arises, that you might back down in the face of some conflict when it comes to supporting other people. Or we see this happen a lot when people just don't follow up and maintain their promises or get things done that they say they're going to get done. Then you lose trust. People are like, well, I can't trust that person with any assignment because I know they're not going to get follow through with it. So part of it has to do with your reliability and dependability. And part of it is truly not being trusted. So, you know, if I can't trust you with a secret or some information, that's a really tough one to overcome.
Let me ask you a follow-up. That if you're a new manager or new to leadership, how in your experience, what are some things that we've seen our clients do to establish trust. Particularly, you know, many times you'll be part of a team, mm-hmm. and then you're promoted against all the other people who are still kind of sitting there in their old chair, and you're now their boss. What are some thoughts there on how to develop that trust?
So, first of all, it takes time. You know, you might not earn their respect overnight. It's going to take you a few months, maybe a year, to do so in some cases. But it takes consistency and it takes sincerity. So you need to make sure that you're being 100% honest with them and where you're at. Not all of a sudden assume this mantle of authority and start barking out orders, but you're more collaborative with people and you help them understand that you're kind of in this with them and trying to learn and overcome your own weaknesses.
Yeah, that's excellent advice.
The next one, and so not trusted, according to our benchmark, is not very high. So it's kind of a medium ranking item in terms of it appearing on 360 results, but it's really one of the most critical ones. If you don't have trust, it's really hard to get anything else done and be really a real credible leader. The next one is micromanager, and this one appears pretty frequently. It's one of the highest frequently appearing derailers. We define this as overly controlling, does not empower others with the freedom and latitude to do their best work. I think most of us are really familiar with this. This is a real common problem for new leaders because, again, they were the best doers, and so they feel like they need to be involved in all the details to make sure that everything gets done right, and they just have difficulty letting go and delegating and kind of giving up some of that ownership that they felt they had before.
Why do you think that most of us really don't appreciate being micromanaged? What is it? Why is that, in your view, kind of a problem?
Well, I think most of us feel pretty competent in what we're doing and that we have some good ideas and good opinions about the work that we're doing. So everyone wants to have ownership. Everyone wants to have this level of autonomy, and that's one of the five keys to employee engagement, is to give people this autonomy. And when they feel like that's being taken away and they're only just doing a set of tasks that have been given to them, they lose interest in work. They lose their engagement in what they're doing. And so micromanagement is kind of the engagement killer in the workplace.
So what would be your advice to someone who says, but how do I ensure that it gets done, right? Yeah. I've got to step in and take over, or else the tasks aren't going to get done.
Well, and that's one of the big, of course, the biggest thing is really to delegate. And we have a whole leadership training session on delegation for new leaders. But delegating with enough instruction and support to help that person be successful. So it's one thing to just kind of give someone a task. It's another thing to sit down with them and train them how to do it, you know, teach them how to fish, so to speak. And that's what is difficult as a manager, because you will find in the beginning it takes you longer to get people up to speed. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be some frustrations. But eventually they'll get up to speed and do a better job, and you'll be more effective.
Right. You got to invest in them and take the time.
Yeah. So the sixth derailer is volatile, or volatility. And we define that as losing his or her temper, losing patience quickly, being irritable, lacking composure. This one ranks relatively high in terms of frequency on our benchmark. And it's a little bit different than someone that just kind of gets mad all the time and swears and gets in people's faces. This could be people that are also overly emotional, right? They take everything personally. And so if this appears as a derailer, what happens is people almost tend to lose trust, or they don't want to go to you because they know you're going to fly off the handle or get overly emotional about things. And so it really it puts a strain on the workplace. It creates more anxiety amongst workers, and it kind of creates just a bad vibe overall. Another engagement killer.
Yeah, volatility. The challenge is it makes life unpredictable, and work is supposed to be predictable.
Right, right.
You never know what you're going to get.
And really, the way to combat volatility, if you find yourself getting upset, is, you know, understanding. So it's kind of this back to emotional intelligence, which is a whole other topic. But understanding your emotions, understanding what you're feeling, why you're taking something personally, why you're getting upset, you know, anger management comes into play here. But really being more open to understand why things are happening, as opposed to jumping to conclusions and getting upset.
Understood.
Number eight is aloofness. We define this as, number seven, I skipped one, is lacks confidence. So this is being overly concerned with making mistakes, being indecisive, or avoiding risk. We find on this one that a lot of people rank themselves somewhat high on this. We all feel kind of a lack of confidence sometimes, but it's not noticed a lot by other people. So we tend to fool people pretty well with this derailleur. It ranks in terms of frequency in the medium range in terms of appearing on 360 results. And the issue here is that I think one of the biggest aspects of being a leader is showing confidence. So people that are more confident tend to gain the respect of other people and are able to help other people get things done. And so you need to make sure that hopefully you're in an environment where making mistakes is okay, you know, where you're not getting beat up all the time, because that will instill this lack of confidence. But you need to have some confidence as a leader to really inspire other people and make people feel comfortable in working with you and around you.
Okay, so that was seven. And now we're going to get to aloof, which is eight.
Yep. Okay. So this one means being distant, unapproachable, isolated, viewed as indifferent to others, fails to build effective relationships. This one doesn't appear a lot. So this is, again, one that's, well, I should say it's more of a medium occurring derailleur. And this is, again, maybe someone that's more labeled as an introvert who doesn't necessarily work through relationships. And this is an interesting case study for us because we work with a lot of multinational corporations. One example I can think of is one that's based in Denmark and has locations all over the world. We're working with a location down in Brazil. And one of the managers there, one of the senior leaders, was from Germany. Very kind of command and control, just get things done, wasn't too concerned about relationships or forming relationships with coworkers. But the issue was the coworkers saw this person as being very aloof because he wouldn't engage with them. And in Brazil, it was really important that you have the relationship first before you do business together. And so this disconnect between cultures was really antagonizing for him because he couldn't figure out why they weren't getting things done. They weren't performing the way they were until he realized that, hey, first, these people want to connect on a personal level before I can be effective on a business level. So you'll see that, you know, even if you are an introvert, it is important to build relationships and make people feel like you care.
I think that for me personally, when I started managing and stepping into leadership roles, was probably the thing that shocked me the most, was how much effort I had to put into building, maintaining, and keeping those key relationships mm-hmm. that were there. And that's probably... it really is a derailleur. If you think you can slide by without effectively monitoring and kind of nurturing those relationships, you're going to be in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah, they're so important as a manager. So number nine is arrogance, being egotistical, displaying a strong sense of entitlement. It goes along a little bit with being aloof, but again, this is a classic mistake that new managers make, where they get the title and all of a sudden they're boss, and they feel like they kind of fall into the trap of the old school management mentality, command and control. Like, I'm in control, you do what I say, I know what's best. And that will definitely ruin or undermine the trust that you have with people, undermine relationships. And it's hard for people to really, you might be able to still get things done just by kind of forcing the issue, but you're not going to get people engaged on your team.
Yeah, arrogance really shows itself when people are unwilling to listen to the opinions of others. Mm-hmm. You know, leadership isn't just about knowing what to do. It's about someone who's willing to consider things and then make the right decision. That's what your team wants to see. And if you think that stepping in and having all the answers is the way to go, you're going to get marked as being arrogant.
Yeah, and it ties closely with the next one, mm-hmm. which is number 10, being closed-minded. And like you said, being close to new ideas, not open to critical feedback, unwilling to consider other viewpoints. And this is classic because most people will say, oh, I'm totally open to feedback. I have an open door policy. You know, you can tell me whatever you think. But many times you find that the direct reports are totally afraid to bring anything up. It's just it's too risky. And so this one is really, making sure people are heard, that you're validating their ideas, even though they might be dumb ideas, you still make sure that they feel like their ideas matter and that they're important. Mm-hmm. And if you're closed-minded, it's really hard to kind of work collaboratively with other people. Closed-minded appears more frequently on our surveys. It's one of the top, it's probably in the top five out of these 13 in terms of frequency of appearance on a 360.
Okay, now we're going to switch a little. We've talked about aloof and arrogant, closed-minded, these sort of characteristics. Now we're going to talk about what?
So number 11 is eager to please. Mm-hmm. This is being overly concerned with being accepted and liked, defers to other people's opinions. So again, if you're the classic yes man, this is where it appears on your 360, being too eager to please. And again, we all want to do a good job. We all want to kind of say yes to our manager. You know, when new assignments are given out, we want to kind of take responsibility and do our best. But this is where you really are too concerned with what other people are thinking, and you don't have an opinion of your own. And people respect managers that have an opinion. Even if it's a dumb opinion or it might be an incorrect opinion, having an opinion and being passionate about something is important. And always just following everyone else's ideas is not the best way to be a leader.
You know, Charles, I'll share with you, when I first started managing someone, I had been told, you know, don't make that, it was an administrative assistant. Don't get too close to them.
Hmm.
But I had this eager to please, and so I made them my friend. And then the challenge was, whenever I needed this person to do better, they looked at me like, why are you even talking to me? We're buds. Like, you know, you can't hold me accountable.
Sure.
We're bros, you know? And it really came, and I really learned after that. And I think that this is one of those things when you're a new manager and going from, say, a pool of individual contributors, that you have that friendship, you have to really start thinking about how to transition to something where you can hold somebody accountable, which means you can't share all the office gossip suddenly. You have to maintain some boundaries so that you have the ability to give some of those or give some feedback in those less than ideal situations.
And it does require you to make the tough calls, to be the bad guy sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, so you do have to kind of step up and take the heat sometimes and have a backbone is okay. What it comes down to. This one is one of the highest, one of the four highest frequently rated derailers. Perfectionist, again, another one of the four highest frequently mentioned derailers. We define this as fails to recognize when something is good enough, obsessive, and uncompromising. This one ties together pretty well with micromanager. So these are the people that really value or feel like their kind of egos or their personalities or personas are tied to how good their work is. And they hate mistakes. If they feel like there's a mistake, they take it personally. So good enough might be bad. We've had some organizations complain to us that wording isn't good because we're all about perfection. But there is a point where you can drive your coworkers and your direct reports crazy with the amount of perfectionism that you require when it just becomes unreasonable.
You know, it's interesting. In larger organizations, it seems that they do push back on this good enough because they have the freedom to sort of demand. They can deal with this, what we call the law of diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
But younger, more startup-oriented organizations, you can't afford to play to go from 95 to 100 because the effort required to go from 95 to 100 is often double the effort to go from 0 to 95.
Yeah.
So it's sort of organizational dependent.
And you're moving so fast.
And as a manager, you need to understand that if you're in a startup or in an emerging organization, they need you to get stuff done. And that's more important than having everything buttoned up.
Yep.
Good enough is just volume sometimes more important anyway. So that was just a comment.
That's a really good point. And so, again, new managers, we see this a lot with them because they are used to being the best workers and getting, you know, the best results. And so once they move into a management position, all of a sudden they can't do everything anymore. They're kind of overwhelmed. You know, they'll be working 80-hour weeks, for example, if they're trying to get everything done. So you really have to learn that happy medium in terms of what's working, what's not, what are the most important things. It's all about prioritization at this point.
Certainly.
So the last one, number 13, is being complacent. And the good news is that this one occurs less frequently. So it's one of the lower scoring items or less frequently mentioned items. We define this as being stagnant, avoiding opportunities for personal growth or learning. Usually when you're a manager, you're more of a go-getter and you're getting things done. But what we see, that when we see this appear, sometimes it's in those managers that have been there for years and years, know everything, happy where they're at, maybe retiring in the next 10 years or something like that. And they're not really looking for growth opportunities, to take on more challenges, to accept new challenging assignments. They leave that for the young millennials who are, you know, young and hungry and eager. But the idea, though, is you really want to continue learning and growing. You might have a lot of institutional knowledge to share, or life experience to share. Use that to mentor other people, develop other people. Don't just sit around and do your job and kind of protect your territory.
Now, I know you're going to take us through, you've kind of been commenting on those that are most common.
Yeah.
Just recap for us, say, if you could, do you have it there, the kind of the top ones?
I do. So those top four that appear most frequently are lax focus, being a micromanager, being volatile, lacking confidence, and I'll throw in here, those top five, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I'll throw in five, eager to please and perfectionist. And so those are the ones that appear most frequently. We see appear, at least on 360s. The ones I want to talk about are these kind of toxic combinations. So this is where we're pairing together either two derailers, or maybe a derailer and an overused leadership competency or strength. And so the first one, there's just a few of these, is lacking focus, lacking confidence, and then being eager to please. And so, again, this is, it turns out this type of personality is where, if you don't have confidence, you're always trying to please other people to kind of gain their respect, or at least gain that confidence back. But it kind of works against you, because then you're being too eager to please. You're always saying yes to projects. You might be failing and not getting those things done because of this lack of focus now that you developed. So you're taking on too much, which kind of results in these poor outcomes. These people also tend to be high on teamwork and collaboration and customer focus, because then, again, they're trying to please people. They're trying to make people feel included and be collaborative, to the detriment of not getting things done. The next one that we see, these toxic combinations, are being a micromanager and perfectionist. So I mentioned this one before already. We also tend to see high scores under leadership competencies for results orientation and planning an organization. So again, these are the doers, the people that have gotten things done, really good at their jobs, really detail oriented, but it doesn't work as a leader to keep doing those same things. You'll burn your people out. The third one I wanted to mention is being not trusted and volatile. And we touched on this a little bit. Again, if you're too emotional with people, they're going to have a difficult time trusting you, because they're not sure if they're going to be talking to Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde when they come to you with a problem. So you tend to lose confidence with people if you're too emotional. And so you need to kind of work on both of those things to build trust with your people. And then the last one is this idea of being aloof or arrogant and closed-minded, that combination we talked about before. This tendency appears when there's high scores under other leadership competencies, such as business acumen or results orientation. So these are the people that are really good, have great knowledge about either the business, the product, what we're doing, or what they're doing, and are able to get things done. But they're Mr. or Mrs. Know-it-alls, you know, and so they understand that they're in that position, and they use that and leverage that maybe in inappropriate ways to get what they want.
So wrapping this up, I wanted to take some time, because as I'm putting myself in the shoes of a new manager, of a new leader.
Yeah.
And the challenge is finding out where you stand, right? And so I thought maybe you could describe for us what multi-rater feedback is, and when do you think it would be soon a good time to get one of these, and how would someone get one within an organization? Because these are life-changing, or can be career-changing, but sometimes they're not, you don't realize that they're not that expensive. You can just have one done, but talk about what multi-rater feedback is.
So, multi-rater feedback, or 360 feedback, is when you're gathering information through a survey from the people that you work with, so your peers, direct reports, your boss, and any other people. And it's a confidential way to get a comprehensive look at your leadership style. So you might say, well, I can just ask somebody, you know, how I'm doing or what I need to work on. And you might get some anecdotal things or a little bit of information. information, but people aren't going to be 100% honest with you. Through a 360, you get some really good, safe feedback that you can use to understand your leadership capability. And especially as a new leader, we do this a lot with organizations where they're actually evaluating people for leadership positions. So is this person, are they high potential? Do they have leadership potential to move into another role? And we'll conduct a 360 with their peers, you know, because they don't have direct reports at the time. So they get that kind of feedback and understand if they really have that capability. And then as a new leader, you'll want to make sure you have a 360 in that position. And usually after 3 months is when we recommend, because then you've worked with people long enough, they kind of know you and your tendencies, and they can give you some good feedback. And so after 3 months as a new leader is a good time to take a 360.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is that you might think that your HR staff is going to come to you and say, hey, it's now time to give you a 360. Mm-hmm. And your organization may not choose to participate in that. That doesn't preclude you from getting a 360.
Yeah.
They're not that expensive. You know, for example, I think here at DecisionWise, if you order just one 360, it's a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And you can say, I'd like you to participate in this process. I really want to get a sense of how I'm doing. And you can be a catalyst for change, even if your organization hasn't adopted a multi-rater or 360-degree feedback program. And so I don't want to make this a sales pitch in any way. You can find these from other vendors. But I think a tip that I wanted to leave, because I've seen how powerful this, and you've really been a champion of multi-rater feedback here at DecisionWise, is you're a new leader. Invest. Find a little mm-hmm. bit of money, a couple hundred dollars. Invest it yourself. And order one up for yourself, and all you need is an email address for the people that are going to be taking it, and you can find some of the most valuable information you will ever get, and you can really change your career path dramatically. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'll chime in. I sold 360s for 12, 13 years right. here at DecisionWise, it was amazing to see the change that happened. So 360s are kind of old now in the industry. They've been around for years, for over 20, 25, 30 years now. But they're still one of the most important ways for people to increase their leadership ability, because it's that awareness factor. You need to understand where you're at, where you need to go, and it's a real catalyst for your own development. And so we always recommend a 360 as the beginning of a leadership training program, as that piece to use for coaching, for example. So it gives you some good data, something to work with. And it's really personal to you. It's a real good self-discovery process that everyone needs to go through. And once you have that information, you're never the same again. And it's a good process.
Yeah. Well, Charles, thank you for taking the time to visit with us. I think this was a really fascinating topic, and I hope that people can see that they've got to figure out where these gaps are, where yeah. these blind spots are, and really take the advantage. Thanks to our listeners for listening, and more information can be found at decision-wise.com. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.